It's hour number three of the Jim Rome Show, and we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can. All right, we spent a ton of time already talking about two of those conversations. Not done just yet. You can hit me up on Twitter. Would love to get your guys' take. I know a couple tweets that have been coming in that are funny as hell. You guys don't mess around. At @Mike_Yam. Would love to get your take on Tua. I promise we'll get to some of those tweets and your reaction coming up later in this hour. One thing that has been clear to me, because I was asked to do the show. I was like, yo, let's roll. I'm super excited to be here. And I was just thinking about the games as I'm watching the games over the weekend. I'm like, hey, what catches my eye? Like, what are some of those topics I want to talk about at the end of the week on this show ahead of the week four slate? And one of the things that I found fairly interesting, and I kind of couple this with what we were talking about before the season started, so much migration of real talent to the AFC West. I mean, what was that conversation like before the season started? Is this the best division we've ever seen in the history of the NFL? All this, all those dramatic moments of, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. No, I mean, it's good. And do I think there's as much talent as we've seen in previous years in any other division? Yeah, there's obviously a strong case for it. But, 3 weeks of games down, if I would have told you that the records would be the Chiefs 2-1, Broncos 2-1, Chargers 1-2, and Vegas sitting at 0-3, I'm like, all right, this is kind of what it is, right? Like, losses were going to pile up for some of these teams. We were going to be concerned about other squads. If I'm being totally truthful, I did not think that if you said at this point, what would the order be? I would have said the Chiefs would have been there. I would not have anticipated Denver being there. In fact, of the teams that are in that division right now, I get that there's a winless squad. I'm more concerned about Denver than I am anyone else. I think some of the issues that these other teams are having are less of a concern. I think are somewhat fixable. Now, health is an issue for the Chargers, which almost uses a separate category. But if I'm the Chiefs, everyone's Tyreek's gone. This offense is going to be different. The whole thing. Guess what? Like, the team's still pretty damn good. And I thought it was a recipe for a disaster. Colts were looking for their first win of the season. You go on the road against Indy. Pittman didn't play the week before for him. I'm like, yo, this might be a tough game for him. And yet, here we go. Chiefs go in there, still in the ball game. That was the game that I think we needed to see from the Chiefs. And I'm not saying the loss. I'm saying we needed to see the game where they didn't have the luxury of having Tyreek Hill in the offense. We knew that the offense was going to have to look different. And I'm not knocking the guys on this team. In fact, I still think they have the potential to be the most prolific offense in the league. When you got Mahomes, like, that conversation still exists. But for me, I look at how different this offense has to be. 8-play, 9-play, 12-play drives. Throw to Tyreek and watch him take off, given the peace sign, going 60 yards into the end zone. That's not going to exist for this team. It's just going to look a little different. And, this is a tough matchup against the Bucs because they're allowing 9 points per game. Got to figure things out relatively quick. I'm not going to make a lot of the Bieniemy Mahomes exchange before halftime. I think everyone has said the right things. Andy Reid said the right things after the game. Mahomes has said the right things. Bieniemy has said the right things. All of that makes sense to me. But in a loss, I go, you know what? You aren't going to run the table. Tough matchup on the road against a Colts team that I still think is in that conversation for a playoff spot. But you got a Raiders team that's in such a massive hole right now at 0-3. 2.6% of teams that started 0-3 went on to make the postseason. That's since 1990. I mean, so you're saying there's a chance. Yeah, there's a chance. I'm just saying it's not looking that good. They're a 2-point conversion away from a tie with the Titans on Sunday for maybe picking up that win. And look, am I the biggest believer in momentum? No, but I do think it's a factor in that game. And I do think had they converted on that 2-point conversion, we probably would have been talking about the Raiders with their first victory of the season. Pass rush hasn't been there just yet. The Raiders are in a hole. Denver is a team that I can't believe, of all the squads here, that I'm talking about that team with that offense being as anemic as it is, figuring out a way to eke out 2 wins right now. The good is the defense has shown it's definitely one of the better units in the league. For as much love as I gave the Bucs, Denver's not all that far behind. They're giving up 12 points per game. The bad is Russ doesn't look like a $200 million quarterback right now. He's thrown two touchdowns in three games. Like, you got to be kidding me here. Completion percentage is less than 60%. That's un-Russ-like, all this cooking with Russ conversation. Broncos got one touchdown on seven trips into the red zone. Like, how the hell are you, how do they have two wins right now? To me, that's the concern. And the Chargers, I've talked about this. We had Brian Baldinger on with us in the last hour of the show. Walking wounded. Joey Bosa, IR right now because of the groin. Slater, and I don't trust anyone more than I trust Baldy when it comes to offensive line play. That was such a massive hit. We're talking about a Pro Bowler in his rookie season. Baldy said it best. You never heard Rashawn Slater's name mentioned during the broadcast because the dude just doesn't get beat that often. And that's a good thing. Slater being gone, that's a problem. Justin Herbert, the rib situation. Keenan Allen banged up because of the hamstring injury. J.C. Jackson, one of those new flashy toys that they got in the offseason. Haven't seen a ton of him out and healthy on the football field so far. Jalen Guyton, who was an up-and-coming wide receiver. I was at Chargers camp in August. There's some buzz around this dude. Out for the year. ACL injury. Not worried about the passing game for that team. I'm more worried about not being able to run the football effectively. Rushing yards per game? Gotta be kidding me. Less than 60? Dead last right now in the NFL. Austin Eckler can't seem to get it going. I'm more worried about the injuries to this Chargers team. So I say all that to make the argument and the case right now that from a Kansas City perspective, let's pump the brakes, man. Like, let's not panic right now. Three games into the season, you still have Patrick Mahomes. You still have one of the more prolific offenses and a defense. What was the number? Seven of their, like, eight, nine draft picks, whatever it was, on the defensive side, drafted some dudes who can play. We've seen some of the results already in a young season on the football field. Bucks are going to be okay. I look at the sheer chaos right now in that division and say, it's going to be okay. We're going to be talking about them for a seventh consecutive season, winning the AFC West. I'm not all that concerned right now. What is weird heading into this week is that Mahomes and Brady feels different. And maybe it feels different because last night I saw Tua go down and my focus has been more about the Miami Dolphins, their offense, concussion protocol, having those types of conversations. But doesn't it feel like heading into this week, we should be talking more about Mahomes and Brady? Like that, I mean, that should be like a headliner game. And yet it feels different because Brady gets Mike Evans back. And that's certainly big here. But that offense doesn't look the same. Mahomes' offense, a little bit of hit last weekend. They'll be okay, though. They'll be fine. A week ago, it was Brady and Rodgers, all the hoopla. I got to tell you, best game this week is Lamar and the Ravens hosting Josh Allen and the Bills. Like, that by far to me is the best game. And yet here it is, we have the GOAT and Patrick Mahomes, who is as talented a quarterback as there is in the game, and it doesn't have that pizzazz, doesn't have that buzz. Now, if Tyreek's playing on that team, are we having a different conversation? Probably, maybe. The Bucs right now, I asked Baldinger this in the last hour, hey, what's your level of concern? Because I was watching that game over the weekend, and I'm sitting there going, it's going to be all good. Week 8, week 9, week 11, we're going to say, hey, these issues offensively for this team, they're in the rearview mirror. Bucs, toughest strength of schedule through the first 4 weeks of the season. Three teams from a year ago that had 12-plus wins on the schedule. So, like, I get it. You were sort of built in some excuses for this team. At least it sounds like I'm doing that right now. But tougher opponents, not a healthy offensive line that's been a revolving door. We've seen the anger. We've seen the frustration. There was that Microsoft Surface tablet that Brady, I don't know if he shattered it, but damn, that thing looked like a bouncing ball on the sidelines. He was so pissed off out on the football field a couple weeks ago. Mike Evans gets suspended. He's back this week. Godwin the groin. Julio Jones is barely out there. Issues, obviously, they got to go and get some depth there. Cole Beasley, they signed a week ago. This is like a team trying to figure things out here. And I think what's kind of ridiculous is, a year ago, we felt like they were going to run it back just because it was the same team. And there's something to be said in how difficult it is to win. This is a different unit. Some of the main building blocks of this team are very different from that Super Bowl run. And it's easy to point to Gronk, but just look at that offensive line and some of the issues that they've had staying healthy. Guys who haven't played on that line, haven't played with Brady, they're not there right now. Fournette looks like, you know, there's still some tread on those tires, but don't look like, you know, playoff Lenny out there through these first couple weeks. So to me, there's still some buzz in this game, but the juice just isn't quite there. I still look at this from a macro standpoint, and I say to myself, Chiefs right now are still in the driver's seat. And the one team that I felt really good about in this division to challenge them was the Chargers. I don't know if that's going to happen right now. Justin Herbert with the ribs, key pieces not being in that lineup. I can't buy on that team at this point. The Raiders have all the talent in the world and yet are winless right now. That hole might be too much. Like, I hate to be dropping, hey, this is a must win this weekend. Like, we all know that at this point. And maybe that settles the score because they have Denver. And Denver, to me, it is still shocking that they have two wins on the season the way that that offense has looked. And I don't know whose narrative is true, but the talk was, hey, Russ, there's the buzz, right? The buzz was Russ wanted out of Seattle, didn't want to play on this squad, wanted to sort of own that team, didn't want to hear about Pete Carroll and the defense leading them to a Super Bowl championship. He wanted to put his fingerprints on an organization, on a franchise differently and maybe get complete credit. I don't know how true that is, but if that is the case, that's not how this is playing. You got 7 trips in the red zone through the first 3 weeks and you got 1 touchdown. Dude, you've thrown 2 touchdown passes to start the season through the first 3 weeks. This is a deep, the reason why they have 2 wins is strictly because of what we've seen on the defensive side. I still don't even think they beat the Raiders this coming weekend. I say all that to say this is still all about the Chiefs. Mike Ammon for Jim Rome. I know some tweets have been coming in just about the Tua situation. I promise we'll get to some more of those. But that obviously has been the major story in the NFL. I did get one that was that got fired off to us a little bit earlier. And Sean was saying Tua should never trust a team doctor again. Just to be clear, from what we saw less than a week ago at this point. And I don't, we can go through the protocols. I did that in the first hour of the show. Independent physician. This was not a team physician in the win against the Bills. Wasn't a team physician last night, although last night were different circumstances when the dude is sitting there and his fingers are locked up. And real personnel understands, doctors and trainers, they understand in that situation there's some brain trauma that is there. Going back to what happened against the Bills, those are not team physicians. You have unaffiliated neurotrauma consultants. They're called UNC, spotters that are on the football field. He got up, he was wobbly, and those physicians who examined him said, back issues. Tua, yesterday, before the game, back issue. That's what the line has been. NFLPA said, no, let's get the investigation. We won't know. I'm not in the business of telling you what happened. I'm not going to play the role of doctor. It was scary as hell watching him out on the football field last night, barely moving, seeing the stretcher come out there. It is, I'm not necessarily squeamish. I'm not that dude who gets worried about the sight of blood and all that stuff. But you're like, it's kind of a horrifying situation. Like, think about getting whipped on the football field like he did and then slammed down to the ground. And immediately your physical reaction that's involuntary is for your fingers to go in a weird position and lock up. If that doesn't give you the, oh, you know what moment, I don't know what does. But you knew that there was some issue there. Not team physicians. And by the way, just an update, just in case you work super late at night, you're just waking up, you're on the West Coast, you don't know this. Did travel home with the team, flew back with those dudes. He was wearing a neck brace. The reports have been, Cameron Wolf, one of my buddies from NFL Network, had tweeted this out. I don't have the tweet in front of me, but paraphrasing here, flew back with the team, laughing and joking with the guys. X-rays were negative, MRI still pending. So the MRI about last night, still need to know what transpired and how long he's going to be out. Typically, concussion protocol, what are we talking about, a week or so for some of these guys? Something tells me it might be a little bit longer for Tua. Just pure speculation, because that was scary seeing that on the football field. As far as what happened against the Bills, still need to wait for that investigation. I'm not willing to say just yet that those two incidents are tied together. I think there might be some evidence for it, but I didn't go to medical school, So I'm not going to tell you that that is the case. I did look this up before the show because I was wondering, how likely is it? You get one concussion, it's a little bit easier to get that second one. Revere Health, one of these sites that I found, said that research indicates someone who's already received one concussion, 1 to 2 times more likely to receive a second one. Individual has 2 concussions, 2 to 4 times more likely to get the third. And if they've had 3, they're 3 to 9 times more likely to get that fourth. Those are scary statistics if you were an NFL player who was playing and saw what happened last night. All of these guys have had to deal with it. All of these guys have been banged up in their careers. They've seen teammates have to leave the game. For Teddy to come in and play, I think, relatively pretty well in that situation, not easy to navigate. Want to hear from you guys. I promise, coming up in about 20 minutes here, we'll get to some of your tweets, some of your comments on Tua. You can tweet at me, @Mike_Yam. All right, still to come here on the show. It's a college football game. It's not Saturday. Yo, it's Friday. It's 2 undefeated. It's UCLA, UW. One of those teams actually has a dark horse for the Heisman. Unique perspective about one of the nation's elite offenses. That's still to come here on the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Mike Yam filling in for Jim Rome here on CBS Sports Radio. Small business owners, listen up. You may have overpaid on your payroll taxes. Well, that's a buzzkill. If you paid payroll taxes during COVID, you may be eligible for an employee tax credit refund of up to $26,000 per employee. Learn more at Omega Accounting Solutions by going to OmegaTaxCredits.com now. All right, it's a Friday night. I know normally we're talking a little college football and what happens on Saturdays. What is kind of cool here is you got 2 undefeated teams. This is where my West Coast love comes. And I know we're all over the country right now, but when it comes to the Pac-12, it's certainly a spot that I'm very familiar with. If you would have told me before the season that Washington would be a top 15 team, would have one of the better offenses in the country, and never trailed in a game so far, I would have said, no, they were a fringe team. They were a team that I felt like could be a squad that is towards the top of the conference, top four-ish, or that bottom four-ish. There were some unknowns here with the new coach in Kalen DeBoer. Felt good about that team's offense. But Christian Capel does a tremendous job covering this team for The Athletic and joins us right now. Christian, are you on that same camp with me? Just not exactly sure of what to get, and this has been a real pleasant surprise?
Yeah, I mean, they were definitely an unknown. I don't think anybody who watched them last year thought that they had 4-8 talent. I picked them to go 7-5 this year, which certainly after this start is looking like I undersold them a little bit. But I still felt like, you know, that even that was like, okay, that's a pretty significant turnaround from last year. This is a team that should absolutely be above 500. They should absolutely make a bowl game. They should be a lot better offensively. They've got a staff that has an effective offense, has an effective scheme. Jake Haener threw for over 4,000 yards and 33 touchdowns at Fresno State last year. Like, you've seen it. They've done it. Michael Penix Jr. is a guy who had some familiarity with Kalen DeBoer. And, you know, when he was healthy in past years at Indiana, was a pretty exciting player. I think people really felt like they had a lot of talent coming back at receiver. So you could see the pieces, and you could see how it made sense to think that they were going to be better. But to come out and just be completely dominant through 4 games and, you know, literally lead the country in passing through 4 games, I don't know that anybody quite saw that coming.
I want to rewind here, Christian, because I know this team probably better than anyone, and I'm familiar with this squad over the years just covering the league. I don't know if this offense has looked nearly as good as it had maybe the last time they made the playoff. Last team from the Pac-12 to make the playoff was Washington. Jonathan Smith, who's now the head coach at Oregon State, he was the offensive coordinator under Chris Peterson. Are you with me? Like, this offense, I know you're right. Like, they're better than 4-8 talent from a season ago. The offense looks completely, not to knock anyone who was there previously, but it actually is fun to watch some of these games.
That's the key word, right? Fun. Like, it's fun. It's exciting. It's wide open. You don't know if it's going to be Romo Odunze or Jalen McMillan or Jalen Polk or Giles Jackson who has a 100-yard game. And they're really deep at receiver. You mentioned that 2016 team. That's kind of the gold standard as far as receiver duos. I mean, they had John Ross and Dante Pettis. I think those two guys combined for 32 touchdown catches that year. I don't know that they're going to have two guys on this team combined for those kind of numbers. But as far as 1 through 4, or at least 1 through 3, and then feeling pretty good about 4 and 5, I don't know that they've ever had a trio of receivers who are this solid. It'll be really interesting. I mean, if those guys stay healthy and they maintain this trajectory, it'll be interesting to kind of look back and see if they set some new benchmarks as far as, you know, what a number 3 receiver in a Washington offense puts up statistically. So it's definitely their most entertaining product since 2016. The one thing, I mean, in 2016, you did have Myles Gaskin was their star running back. He was a sophomore. I think he was first team all conference that year. And, you know, that was a guy who wound up breaking every career rushing record they had. So you don't have that real number one defined workhorse back, although they've remade that running back room, and they've had some guys like Wayne Talapapa has come in and made some really big plays. So it's maybe a little bit more by committee, or at least by 2 or 3 guys there than the 2016 team had. But yeah, I mean, this is absolutely the best offensive product that they put together since they made the playoff.
You could correct me if I'm wrong here. Jake Browning that year in 2016, I think he was 6th in the Heisman vote. Is Michael Penix going to finish higher than that?
It's certainly possible right now, and you're right. Yeah, Jake Browning was 6th. I think Penix was actually 6th in our – we do a staff straw poll every week, just kind of taking the temperature of where the Heisman race is at, and I think Michael Penix Jr. was 6th this week. So he's kind of hovering around the fringes. I mean, it's going to take them – probably being in the Pac-12 championship game and maybe winning the conference and maybe even being in the playoff discussion for him to get legitimately looked at. But, you know, if he keeps leading the country in passing and you know, averages 3 touchdown passes a game and takes care of the ball and avoids sacks and, you know, makes big plays and puts up big numbers when they're in, you know, big primetime TV slots, I think he'll have a shot. But I think right now they're just kind of enjoying the resurgence and having more eyeballs on Washington and people talking about Washington and, you know, the Heisman and all those sort of things. They're going to have to win at a really, really high level, I think, for him to get into that conversation. But he is at least kind of getting some early recognition.
The win against Michigan State and Mel Tucker's crew, I think, sort of legitimizes this team and that ranking of 15. You said, hey, got to get it done in big primetime games. Man, Christian, it's a Friday night. It's Chip Kelly. It's UCLA. It's the Rose Bowl. Like, it's a lot of eyeballs on a matchup with an undefeated team. And by the way, they got a really good quarterback in Dorian Thompson Robinson as well. What do you expect to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be really a really close game. I think it's going to be a tough challenge for their defense. Even in years past, you know, I think everyone knows, like, if you know about Washington football under Chris Peterson, they were always really solid defensively. They put a bunch of guys in the NFL on that side of the ball. But the one thing that they had trouble with, I mean, even in the years where they were really, really successful defensively, was a really mobile quarterback who could hurt you with his legs when things broke down and things were covered up downfield. This is going to be a huge challenge for them that way. They've been banged up at corner. So, I mean, it's going to be a big challenge in the passing game generally, but then also trying to contain someone like Dorian Thompson Robinson who can really hurt you with his legs if things break down. But yeah, I just haven't seen a quarterback of his caliber athletically yet this year. And this is also their first road game. Yeah. You know, they got to play their first 4 games at home. This is their first road game under Kalen DeBoer. It's a short week, playing an unbeaten team at a stadium that probably won't have a ton of atmosphere going on based on some of the attendance trends there. So, and you know, the jury's still out a little bit on UCLA too, right? I mean, they played a soft non-conference schedule. They opened against Colorado. I think there's still some questions about Washington, similar to the way that there are about UCLA. Obviously, Washington has been very convincing and looked really good in its 4-0 start. But, you know, both of these teams tonight are kind of seeing something that they haven't seen yet this year. So, I think it'll be a tight one. I picked Washington. I think I picked them to cover the 3.5-point spread, although that line has moved a little bit too. But I think it's going to be a good challenge for them.
Christian, you're the best man. I don't know anyone who covers this team better than you do. At Christian Capel, you can find him on Twitter covering this team for The Athletic. Always appreciate the insight, man. Looking forward to chatting real soon.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Christian Capel on a game and a matchup that I do think has got some national appeal to it. Look, Penix is leading the country in passing. This is a squad on the West Coast when they're rolling is dangerous. 5-0 start potentially would be their first since 2017. You know, it's kind of crazy. You think about where they are statistically speaking. USC heading into this season, I think we all felt like, hey, nationally getting a ton of recognition, Lincoln Riley there, offensively looking like an absolute juggernaut. Had some, look, they gutted out a win against Oregon State last week. What I think is really interesting here is this is a Washington team with Penix, already mentioned, leading the country in passing. They put up 478 yards against Stanford, and that's a season low for them. Like, they are showing that they are one of the premier teams, not only in the country, certainly on the West Coast. You know, I work with David Carr and at NFL Network, and one of the things that's fascinating to me, and Christian brought this up with Jake Haner and Fresno. Kalen DeBoer, who's now Washington's head coach, came from Fresno. Jeff Tedford, he was working with him, offensive coordinator for him. And I had asked David, we were watching a game one night, and I turned to him, I said, man, I can't believe I haven't even asked you about Washington and Kalen DeBoer. Do you guys know each other pretty well? I'm assuming you do. And he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, you know, me and Derek, like, certainly still keep tabs on the program. You know, we're friends. We all know about Kalen DeBoer. I was like, what do you make of him as a coach? And he said, this is what I'll tell you. Jeff Tedford is a guy that I trust as much as anyone that I've ever been around and in the coaching ranks. And he said to me that Tedford said that Kalen DeBoer was the best offensive mind in the country. So that, for David, when he told me that story, I was like, oh, okay. And this is before the year started. Now I'm seeing Penix roll. Now I'm seeing this offense put up ridiculous video game type numbers. And I'm starting to buy a little bit more. It's all starting to come together a little bit. As for tonight, I'm actually with Christian here. I actually think it's going to be a heavy dose of Washington. Questions about UCLA secondary right now. Saw an interesting stat, and I know we don't have time to get into the weeds on this, but when you think about NIL, and I know Rome's talked about this on the show, and transfer portal and guys that are moving all over the place, there's college coaches that are coming on this show all the time. On the West Coast, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, DTR, and Tanner McKee. McKee's a guy, by the way, keep your eye on, because I do think he's going to get drafted. He's an NFL-type guy at Stanford. Those are the only two guys in the Pac-12 conference that have starting quarterbacks who rejoin their programs out of high school. Like, think about how crazy that sounds. Two dudes out of high school with their programs in a league that's got 12 teams, only two of them came from high school to those programs. And that is just, it's the nature of the beast. That's just what all of this stuff is now. Glad Christian gave us his take on tonight. I thought we'd have a little more time to get to USC, but I know Rome will be talking plenty about Lincoln Riley's squad. All right, still to come, I'd asked for it. Be careful what you wish for, right? At @Mike_Yam, filling in for Rome today. Want to get your take on Tua. I have a feeling I'll be told how I did on this show. I am bracing myself for the worst. Mike Yammon for Jim Rome here on CBS Sports Radio. Jim Rome Show. Mike Yam filling in for Jim. It's been a ton of fun. Hopefully it fell fast to everyone listening. I was just telling Elvin and Garrett, I was like, yo, this has been fun, man. Faster than I had anticipated, which to me is always a really good sign. I had asked for some tweets at @Mike_Yam on the Tua situation, kind of leafing through a couple of these. By the way, it is time to answer your question. It's time to answer and ask the pros a question where you, the clones, get to submit a question at cbssportsradio.com. Ask the Pros, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Garrett had forwarded me an email. We were going back and forth on this one. Michael, if you had to pick one TV show to watch over and over again, what would it be? And Garrett said, hey, do you have one of those? And I was like, actually, there's a few shows that I watch and would be totally, you know, the Breaking Bads of the world, Homeland. Those are definitely my jam. But I said to Garrett, I was like, yo, I actually know the show. And I can answer this question from Bella pretty easily because I'm in the middle. Sometimes I have issues sleeping. Yeah, I don't do the Ambien deal. Just actually, speaking of, by the way, I got a tweet and I did catch a little bit of yesterday's show that, and I got some flack for not opening up talking about dreams like that happened yesterday. Let me just tell you, you don't want to be in my skull and know what happens at night. That's part of the reason why I don't do the Ambien deal. And sometimes we'll just do the melatonin. But the point is, so on HBO, I'm still mad. HBO does a tremendous job. They put out great, great programming. I think we can all agree there's a ton of great stuff to go and watch. I'm still mad. Still mad that HBO canceled this show after two seasons. Not many people clearly were watching. To me, it is one of my favorite shows of all time. It's called How to Make It in America. And Garrett's like, what? I don't even know what that is. No clue. Come on. Well, this is on your to-do list then. Put it on there. So they canceled this thing after two seasons, and it is still one of my favorite shows for a lot of reasons. One, the music in it. Alvin, this is right up your alley, man. Like, because you've been playing me music all day. Trust me, you're going to love. The music is phenomenal in the show. One, so I always say it's like, if you don't know the show, I've always said it reminds me of Entourage. Entourage, obviously, L.A., West Coast, How to Make It in America, New York City, or only two dudes. It's kind of got like a grittier vibe than Entourage is how I describe it. And it's dudes just literally just trying to make it. They're trying to run their own business. And you know, they got these like, you know, kind of crazy ideas and they get these opportunities. But part of the reason that I'm also fixated on the show, because the writing, I think, is good. The characters are great in it. It does remind me a little bit, you know, they go out. And it reminds me of like my early 20s at some times, you know, like going out in New York and hanging out. I know we heard Andrew Bogish in the first hour does updates. Drew and I went to college together at Fordham. So like I do think and I flash back, you know, and sometimes I just smile. Like I finish an episode and I'm just on to the next one. Like it's just, I'm so mad they canceled this thing after two seasons. Garrett, Alvin, both of you guys, you do know the show. Yeah, Crisp. Chris Denham, come on. So I'm glad you know. And it's worth a rewatch. So, Bella, that would be the show for me to watch over and over again. I know I had asked for some reaction. By the way, you guys have been so... I was told... Bogish actually gave me a heads up, if I'm being totally and truthfully honest with everyone on the show. He texted me last week, and all it said was, Jim Rome. And I was like, damn, like, how did Drew know? Because I'm thinking, like, I get the CBS Sports... radio connection, but I didn't know. Drew's in New York, man. Like this is, you know, I'm in California. Like, so he knew, I guess there was some sort of email that went out and he said, yo, just be prepared when the guests fill in for Jim, they go at him and it could be a little harsh. And I was like, okay. Like, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, man, everyone's got Twitter muscles. It's all good. I've been getting it for years. You can hear like you suck and, you know, the variations of my last name and sweet potato. I'm like, dude, I go by Yammer half the time anyway. Like I'm not going to be offended. It is what it is. So in the break, I go into the control room to just talk to Alvin and Garrett for a second. I'm like, hey, man, we got any stuff on Tua? And I'll get to that in just a second here from earlier in the show. And I said, how bad was it? Like, did I get? And he's like, no. So you read a couple tweets. So there was some really nice ones, legit, really greatly appreciated because I was expecting the worst. And Garrett did say, hey, like someone said you did a really nice job. And he's showing me the tweet. And he goes, yeah, but this one, basically, they're saying that you suck and you're not interesting. Okay. Like, I get it. Like, it's cool. I'm not Jim. I'm not, you know, and Jim obviously is a legend. So it is awesome to be with you guys today and to get some of the reaction and some of the love because I was anticipating the worst from a lot of the listeners. And I'll blame Bogish on that one. I did get a tweet on Tua, and I know we spent a lot of time talking about him, and it's obviously the top story, and I think everyone is overly concerned about his health and well-being. Just to kind of reset here, this morning, the last thing that I had saw before we came on air, and I've been sort of monitoring it, one of my buds and colleagues over at NFL Network who covers the Dolphins, Cam Wolf, had said, hey, flew back with the team, was wearing the neck brace, X-rays came back pretty good, awaiting the MRI, but was laughing and smiling and talking and walking with a lot of his team. So very, very positive in what was a very scary situation. And by the way, by no means am I saying because the dude is laughing and hanging out and walking and talking that he's okay. Like, I understand enough about concussions to know that, look, we're not going to see him out on the football field in their next game. Helps. It was a Thursday night. Got a little extra time here to get ready. But I would still, with all the eyeballs on this, I would still be surprised if we saw Tua out there next week. And I think that's a good thing right now. So just make sure that everyone is healthy enough to continue to have that career. We had Brian Baldinger on in hour number two. Guy played, understands the demands physically on a lot of these players. And I think he put it best. He said, hey, we want to make sure from a protocol standpoint that these guys are not only fit and healthy enough to play when we say that they're clear to go and play, but are able to be functioning at a high level when their careers are done. And that is obviously first and foremost the biggest thing. It's not about the wins and the losses. And I think it's so short-sighted. You know, people say Mike McDaniel, yeah, maybe he knew and they shouldn't have thrown him out there. I'm like, you know, what's he going to do? Mike McDaniel, really smart guy. Yale dude. I get it. Not a doctor, though. I mean, all these head coaches, all 32 of these teams, they have to go to the experts and go off of their recommendations. And that's not to say that, hey, you don't have caution moments where you're thinking, hey, is this the right thing for this player? I think to me, it's so short-sighted to throw a guy out there if you're not sure. I think you have to err on the side of caution. I don't know if that's what happened. And we'll find out coming off that Bills win, because the NFLPA saw enough, like all of us did watching that game, to say, hey, should he be out there in the second half? And they said it was a back. There's an investigation. The results coming in about a week or two is the timeline. And believe me, based off of what we saw last night, trying to figure out, are these things connected? We might never know the answer to that, but it is something to keep in mind. V had sent in a note. I think the Dolphins organization put safety first. I would hope that every team in the NFL is sort of thinking in those terms. And I saw another tweet that came in, Tua shouldn't trust team doctors again. Guys, went through the protocol in the first hour. Told you, it's not team physicians that are going through some of this stuff. There's an unaffiliated neurotrauma consultant. They're at all the stadiums. They're at all the games. They have the ability to pull a player off. They have ability to stop the game, pull that guy off the field, and then evaluate them. Multiple checks on how they're evaluating some of these guys. There's an evaluation process. Those steps are everything from eye movement to speech to pain, motor movement, how guys are functioning. What's scary is what we saw against the Bills. And I'm not, look, last night was another thing. It's seeing those fingers locked up. That's concerning and that is scary. What I'm referring to is what was supposed to be, what we're being told is the back issue. When he stands up and is kind of like wobbly, might be the best way to describe it. I mean, his head, you know, I've seen the replays a couple times, the head slightly moving, but initially it's almost like his body started to give a little bit. And there's a part of me, and maybe it's just because like, oh, it makes sense. It was a back injury. That's what we were told. I said this in the first hour. I'm actually dealing with some back issues, some knee issues myself right now. And there are times where if I'm walking, I almost feel like my knee kind of gives way a little bit. I'm way too young to have those issues, but I do. So when I had heard, oh, it's a back, I thought to myself, well, all right, it's kind of believable. That's what they said the issue is. NFLPA put out the statement last night. The investigation is still ongoing. I got the tweet in front of me right here. Player health and safety is at the core of the union's mission. Our concern tonight is for Tua, and we hope for a full and speedy recovery. Our investigation into the potential protocol violation is ongoing. You know, if I can't even imagine the uproar that would transpire if there's some violations here. Now, once again, a week or two is when we'll find the results of some of this stuff. But those are scary moments. Understanding the fact that I'm looking up and Googling posturing last night, because people are talking about that. And this idea of fencing out there, And if you don't know what those terms are, I encourage you to do your own research on that stuff. But the short is, when your body starts positioning itself in an involuntary manner after, you know, some sort of traumatic issue or contact, there's some brain issues that are happening on the football field. That's what gave you the locked fingers out there. I know there's been so much talk about Tua last night, and I said this, John Breach joined us from CBS Sports in the last hour. There was a football game that was played. And I think, to me, what's wild is you spend so much time as teammates. And for those who don't know, you got your position groups. They break out. We all watch Hard Knocks to get a better sense of what's happening behind closed doors. But Bridgewater spends God only knows how many hours with Tua at practice, film, probably have a meal schedule, the whole thing. They go and see this dude get carted off on a stretcher. He's out there. How do you not think about that guy and think about the human aspect of it? Like, I get it. He's got to go and play. That's part of the job. But these dudes are humans. They're not robots out there. There's our emotions. There are feelings that are happening. And yet I thought Teddy actually played pretty well for the most part. I know the pick, you know, there's some issues there on that final drive there. Sicky, which way is he going? But for as much as we'll say the concern on Tua, if we turn this page here and start thinking about football, which is hard to do, and it's not easy to do, I got to tell you, it was good to see from a Cincinnati perspective those dudes handle business in a big way. All right, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They're close, convenient, and known for guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service from professional parts people. You can trust them. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. When I say it's been a treat, I really do mean it. It's been an absolute thrill. It really has been an honor filling in for Jim. I don't know if I'll be back. Hopefully I will be able to hang with you guys at some point. It has been so much fun. Cannot thank you guys enough for the supportive messages and the ones that were not as supportive but certainly got me to laugh. I'm Mike Yam, filling in for Jim here on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks, guys.